Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. I'm filling in this week for Jen Cault of Humble Baykeeper, so I'm sorry if you were looking forward to hearing Jen. You're stuck with me instead. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. So I have three special guests joining me in the studio today. First, we have Kutcha Risling-Baldy, Assistant Professor of Native American Studies at Humboldt State, Director of the Native Women's Collective, and enrolled member of the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Kutcha is also a blogger who writes a deeply funny and illuminating blog at her website, KutchaRislingBaldy.com. We have Regina Cicizola, the Salmon Water Policy Analyst for the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, and is the co-director of SAVE, the Klamath Trinity Salmon, and is the winner of the 2017 Rose Foundation Anthony Grassroots Prize for her outstanding grassroots organizing around water rights on the Klamath River. And lastly, but not least, is Dave Bitts, President of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and a commercial fisherman based out of Humboldt County, fishing salmon and crab. And so my guest panel today is almost like the setup to a joke. So a professor, an environmentalist, and a fisherman walk into a bar together, and we can finish the rest of that joke throughout the episode. So to start off with, we have a bad fish year. How about Dave? Do you want to talk to us about why this is going to be a bad year for salmon?
There are not very many fish in the ocean this year. These fish are the product of drought years a couple years back before the rain started on the Klamath River. Most of the fish were infested with a fatal parasite and probably did not make it to the ocean alive. On the Sacramento River, water conditions combined with exports from the Delta meant that the same thing happened. Most of the juvenile fish did not make it to the ocean alive. And so there are very few available to catch this year. Just to show you how dire this is, 5 years ago there were a lot of Klamath fish in the ocean, and the ocean share of harvestable Klamath fish was about 70,000. That's 7 with 4 zeros after it. This year, the ocean share is about 700 fish, about 1% of what it was 5 years ago. This is not a good situation.
And so this is going to have very real impacts into your life as a commercial fisherman and into the lives of many members of our community who rely on salmon for subsistence purposes. Kutcha, would you be able to speak to the importance of our salmon fisheries to the Yurok, Hoopa, and Kurukh tribes?
I think it has several different kinds of importances. I mean, it's economically important to us as people. It's spiritually important to us. It's culturally important to us. It sustains us as people. But it also, you know, we have a minimum 10, 15,000 year history with these fish being a part of their lives and taking care of them. And I think sometimes it speaks to the fact that we are up against something very, very strong that means that we have to fight even harder for our salmon, because this is, we look at the world as interconnected. And so when we're looking at problems with fish, we're starting to see that there's going to be real problems with water. There's going to be real problems with our communities. There's going to be problems with people everywhere. This is a sustainability issue that should matter to everyone. And so when we're talking about what's the impact it's going to have, well, I don't think people have done the right kinds of studies to talk about the impact that it's going to have on the rest of the environment and the wildlife that also depend on salmon. We keep talking about it as our rights to salmon, and not just like, what about bears' rights to salmon? What about what salmon brings to the water and to the future of the river? So we see it as a very holistic and interconnected piece in our communities, and are looking at it in that way when we're starting to talk about what that means for our future and what we need to do next.
And I think that this year, and please correct me if I'm wrong, any of you, but the Yurok tribe has said that there's going to be no commercial fishery this year at all for salmon. I believe last year was the first year that they didn't have any salmon available for some traditional feasts. It's alarming in a way that I think that it's difficult for European Americans to understand. Well, so Dave, talk to me about the impacts to our commercial fishermen here in Humboldt Bay. How is this salmon reduction or salmon tragedy affecting our fishers?
Well, most of the people that normally would be somewhere south of San Francisco right now trying to catch salmon basically did not gear up to do that this year because they did not see that there was a whole lot of point to doing it. I think there are about three fishermen from Eureka I know of that have gone all the way to Monterey, which is where we have to go to fish at this time of year. We're having tiny scraps of a season available in terms of opportunity. And so far, the catch rate has been pretty much consistent with the predicted scarcity of fish. And we do not have 10,000 years of history of catching these fish, but we do. We are a subculture of people that do not fit into the mainstream of American society very well. These fish are important to us for a lot more than the income they bring us at the dock. It's a way of life that right now is in jeopardy.
And so what are you going to do instead of salmon fishing this summer?
Well, I was fortunate to be one of the few this year that had a decent crab season out of Eureka, and I am planning to spend my summer helping to get crab gear out of the ocean. That there's an awful lot of stuck traps below the entrance to Eureka, and people have traps stuck that do not have the pumps to get them loose. I'm hoping to help out with that, and if all I do is scare other people into getting it done, that's fine too. But if I get to do some of it, that should keep me busy.
All right. So, Regina, at the kind of 30,000-foot level, we've had droughts before in the state. Droughts are a naturally occurring phenomenon. And I imagine that in the past, they affected salmon like they did during the years that we had a drought here recently. But something changed, and the salmon are not suffered that drought much more than they probably did in the past. What's going on? What are our management decisions doing to salmon, and what's causing them to decline?
Well, while drought is somewhat of a natural thing, I don't think it's necessarily natural to have droughts last so long. Obviously, climate change has a part to play here. But also, the state of California and the federal government made a decision to put the agriculture interests above the interest of the salmon in this situation. California allocates much more water than it actually has, even in a wet year. So we're in a situation where there'll never be enough water for everyone who wants the water to have. And while the regular person in California was told to control their water use, agriculture did not necessarily have to control their water use. They kept using water. And what we had, like Dave said before, was a situation where in the Klamath, the salmon were perishing from fish diseases that could have been preventable through either dam removal or higher flows. And in the Sacramento, the fish were dying from not having enough water. And so California, if they want to keep our salmon from actually going extinct, is going to have to make the decisions to actually provide clean water to our rivers and to start looking at habitat issues and taking down some dams. And I think that that's probably the difference, that California purposely or knowingly made the decision to give more water to farmers than they did to their rivers.
Can I add something to that?
Of course.
I did a lot of research on the drought when it was happening, especially because a lot of the commercials were really about you can make a difference, like, you know, take shorter showers and catch your water in a bucket and use that later, like all these kinds of things that people were supposed to do. And we feel an individual responsibility for our water use, I think, all over the state of California. And they showed a massive reduction by individual people during the drought. They stepped up. They did it. But what was interesting is something people kept repeating to me is Humboldt County during that time was not in a drought. And so we should have had enough water to protect our salmon and our fish. The thing that made us have drought-like conditions was the seizure of our water, the sort of taking of it to protect this agricultural industry. And you're talking about an agriculture industry that kept planting during the drought. Mm-hmm. So while individual people were saying, I'm going to make a difference, the agriculture industry continued to plant water-dependent crops mm-hmm. during this period of time. They did not change what they were doing. So you see that. And what they show really is actually this is not to support our economy in a really significant way. Like the California economy, we keep thinking we depend on agriculture, but it's not the most significant impact on how we build our economy. So you can see that we've had a lot of, I think, lobbying done by certain industries that has allowed this to continue. And when you look at the statistics and the facts, it doesn't support what's happening with water in California.
It burned me up inside in 2014 to drive to Sacramento and see new almond trees being planted and alfalfa fields with sprinklers spraying on them, just knowing that, you know, that crop wouldn't even feed folks in California or folks in America, that most of that crop is eventually going to get shipped overseas. So we're shipping our water overseas in a really inefficient manner by putting it first into almonds.
And I actually wrote a blog entry about that, and then Almonds tweeted me. So I don't know, Almonds has like a Twitter.
Yeah,
it's
really?
It's called like @Almonds. Uh-huh. I don't know who it is. I picture like an almond, like an actual almond, like sitting behind his computer. Like, I'm going to write to her about what, right? But Almonds actually tweeted me after that blog entry, and they were like, we want you to know the real facts behind almonds, because I had put out all of these facts that I had found from all this research that I had done. And their facts were very skewed toward, you don't understand the numbers, but we're not. And the thing is the numbers are very clear, especially when it comes to things like almonds. It takes 1 gallon of water to grow one almond. So if you're eating a handful of almonds, that's like 10 gallons of water. And there was a report that came out, a guy who had written it, and I think he didn't expect it to go this viral, but he actually said in his article that when he looked at the numbers, he figured out that if every person, Los Angeles County and South in California, moved, it wouldn't affect the level of water that was being used as the reduction of like 10% of the almond crops would. So even if you move that many people out of California, you're talking about if they did a 10% reduction in almond crops, it would have the exact same effect.
Another thing to remember about this is a lot of those crops are being grown so far from where there actually is water that Humboldt County can have tons of water, but that doesn't mean our rivers aren't going to be diverted down to the East San Joaquin Valley or areas where not only do they not have their own water, but they also are farming toxic land that is being, and they're using water from super far away. And there are big lobbies like Westlands Irrigation District that are actually getting more and more public resources and more water rights given to them under the Trump administration. So we're taking good water that could be used from salmon and we're diverting it to the East San Joaquin Valley, to areas where there are no water and there's toxic soil, in order to make the richest farmers in America even richer so that they can export crops to other places.
And the Westlands Water District is doing everything it can to get out from under its obligation to deal with its toxic runoff, which eventually makes its way to the San Joaquin River and to the bay, and basically is one of the factors preventing the restoration of salmon in the southern half of the Central Valley.
Well, you are listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Kutcher Risling-Baldy, Regina Cicisola, and Dave Bitts about salmon and water and the allocation of both here in the North Coast. Okay, well, there are structures in place that facilitate this water transfer, the giving away of our water from the North Coast to other places. So we have dams, we have pipelines, we have canals. Anyone want to talk about the current dam removal effort and how that's going on the Klamath?
Sure. It's been taken away from Congress. And
yay.
As we speak, the dam removal process is on track to remove the dams 3 years from now. The ownership of the dams is being transferred from PacifiCorp to the dam removal entity. That is not a snap of the fingers. It's a fairly lengthy process. But once that is completed, that entity exists for the sole purpose of removing those dams. And it appears that dam removal is the only solution anyone has come up with to the problem of the sea Shasta parasite that kills fish in the Klamath River. The reason being that parasite needs a lot of algae on the bottom of the river for its co-host to live in. If you have enough gravel scouring the bottom, the algae is not so bad. The parasite's not so bad. The only way you get that gravel is to take the dams out and let it flow down from upstream in the wintertime. So we're looking forward to that.
And how many dams are going to get removed in total?
4 dams total.
All right. And which ones are they? Let's give a shout out.
Okay. J.C. Boyle, which is the primary power generator of the 4 dams, Copco Dams 1 and 2, and Iron Gate Dam, which is a flow control dam that also generates a small amount of power. All 4 of these dams combined generate something like 2% PacifiCorp's power portfolio, and they are planning the installation of wind and solar power that will far outstrip what those dams produce.
And this dam removal is so interesting to me because instead of the usual thing where the dam owners are fighting to keep their dams against the enviros and the tribes and whatnot, we have PacifiCorps on our side. Everyone wants to do this except for Doug LaMalfa and some kind of wacky farmers, right?
Well, one thing that I would say is the only reason that PacifiCorps is on our side is because of the advocacy of the community and the advocacy of the tribes and fishermen. PacifiCorps said there was absolutely no way they were going to take these dams down. And then we made sure that every single scientific study came out that showed that salmon would be able to prosper and water quality would be better if we took the dams down. We went to Warren Buffett shareholders meetings. We went to every water board meeting. And we got active as a community and we joined together. And we made sure they took these dams down. So this was not something that was offered by PacifiCorps. This was something that the community made happen. And I'm very proud of the people on the Klamath for that.
And if you like the result that we eventually got the owner of the dams to come around to supporting dam removal, and you like the idea of people advocating for results like that, then check out the event we're having on the 27th of May. Which is a benefit for the Institute for Fisheries Resources and the Klamath and Trinity Salmon.
Save the Klamath Trinity Salmon, but the money that comes in through Save the Klamath Trinity Salmon will go to a fund for community action for salmon on the North Coast and Klamath Rivers.
And your donations will be tax deductible.
Perfect. And so something that has really ignited the environmental community in this last year was Standing Rock. And it's really exciting that we are having this connection between environmental voices and Native voices. But, you know, as you brought up, we started that here on the Klamath before, and we got PacifiCorps to change. There's a somewhat similar project being proposed for the Klamath River right now, a natural gas pipeline. Ketcha or Regina, would you like to talk about what is being proposed and what is being done to organize our voices to stop this project?
So what's being proposed is that FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, had a proposal to build a liquefied natural gas facility at Coos Bay, and they want to build a giant pipeline that would go from Coos Bay to the Klamath River. I think that pipeline would cross something like 230, that might not be the right number, salmon streams, including the Klamath River, the Rogue River, and the Umpqua River. And people are so opposed to this project, they would actually take away landowners' rights to their own land through eminent domain. And because of the environmental impacts and the impacts to landowners, this project has actually been denied twice. But now Trump is stepping in like he is to everything and saying that, oh, we need more pipelines, whether or not they make sense economically or not. So definitely the Klamath communities and communities throughout Oregon, especially tribal communities, are really organizing to make sure that this pipeline does not go through. And we will be talking about that a lot more at the event in Eureka on the 27th. Ketcha, do you want to add anything? Or?
You know, I think what's important about the activism that you mentioned around Standing Rock is that suddenly people were more than willing to talk about the fact that these pipelines have been built all over the land in the United States and Canada. They are affecting large communities, and these tend to be communities where you have people of color who are being put at risk. Like, it's their water, it's their resources that are being put at risk. And what you start to see is the more you look into it, it is very obvious that these are not safe. They say it is not a matter of if a pipeline will leak. It is just a matter of when. There's very little regulation that goes on with pipelines. They don't have enough staff in order to actively monitor what's going on with pipelines. So they have actually relied on the companies who built the pipelines to monitor their own pipelines, who then don't have to report on spills. There's new legislation coming down from this current administration saying that people shouldn't have to report on pipeline spills because it would cause like people to panic or something like that. So you're looking at this idea of them trying to cover up what's really going on. They know that it's not a safe way to do things. They know that it can actually cause damage to the environment. They know these things, and yet they keep building them. And I remember talking to somebody about how they're, in my opinion, they are sort of like a bunch of really old dudes hanging on to like an old way of life who sort of refuse to see that that is not anything that we need anymore and that they have to move on to the next thing. They know that it's energy, it's things that actually aren't beneficial economically. They're just sort of digging in their heels and refusing to change. And what's being put at risk then is our futures and all these people. So we should all be upset because every one of us very likely lives in an area where there is a pipeline, whether it be natural gas or oil or any number of things. And those things are going to affect us, especially as one by one we start to realize that there are not the safety regulations that people think in order to prevent them from causing massive amounts of damage.
So we're going to stop this pipeline. We're going to get the dams out. But there's other things that are being proposed that are going to threaten our water security here on the North Coast. Regina, could you talk about the Twin Tunnels and some of the other new water diversion projects that are slated to occur?
So one of the things that is not good that came from the drought, which obviously the Trump administration is all about, is there's all this talk about how we need to have new water storage and new water diversions. And though the California Democrats will try to pretend that they're super environmental, Jerry Brown is pushing a project to build two massive tunnels that will take water mainly to agricultural interests like Westlands and from the North State. So they want to move the current diversions for the state and federal water projects from the Delta, which takes in San Joaquin and Sacramento water, and move it up the Sacramento River, which will be highly threatening to the Trinity River also because mm-hmm. the San Joaquin water will have to be replaced. There's no way that the state and federal water projects are going to just start using less water. So and we also have a real push to build more dams in the state of California, and the North State is going to be seeing that more than anywhere else. There's a project called the Sites Reservoir that is being fast-tracked like crazy right now through some new drought legislation that Dianne Feinstein got passed. And that's also going to put a lot more pressure on the Trinity River. And then there's another proposal to make the Shasta Reservoir even higher, which would make more water be diverted, and it would inundate a lot of land that is currently used by tribes that is sacred land. So I think we are very threatened. We have some good things going on with dam removal on the Klamath. We might be able to get some dam removal happening on the Eel River, hopefully. I know Friends of the Eel River is working hard on that, but we need to watch out for what's coming down the pike, because if they're going to build tunnels and dams throughout the North State, then all of our rivers are definitely threatened.
These project sites that you mentioned and the raising of the Shasta Dam and the proposed Temperance Flat Dam upstream from an existing dam on the tributary. It's on the San Joaquin River, I think. These apparently are the, quote, best, unquote, remaining water storage projects that people can come up with, and none of them makes the grade on its own terms. If you ignore the environmental consequences, these projects still don't pencil out. And what that says is we've already developed all the water that is developable in California. If we're going to continue to grow as a state, we're going to have to learn how to do it using less water, reusing water, finding other sources, and I don't mean groundwater because that's depleted too. This is not a wet state, and it is a very highly developed, over-dependent on water state, and what we're doing is not sustainable. If we continue on the path we're on now, we're likely just not to have any fish and wildlife left in this state, because that's the path we're on, make no mistake about it. And if we let salmon go, then where will we draw the line? When will we say, okay, enough is enough? We've got to leave some other critters in the state besides people.
Ooh, this is getting heavy. Is there something that gives you hope or allows you to get up and fight every day for more water, for more salmon?
I think, you know, I teach a lot of classes at HSU, and I meet a lot of the students. I teach mostly freshmen, too. And what gives me hope are my students. They are really smart, and they are invested. And when you start to talk to them about what's going on around them with their environment, and so many of them are majoring in majors that will allow them to be smart about what happens in our state in the future. And they are learning about really important things. And a lot of it is telling them that, you know, Native people have been approaching this from the very beginning as, how do we understand our responsibility to this earth not just our rights to what we want to do, but our responsibility to what that means. And so we don't fish the salmon because we have a right to do it. We do it because that is part of our responsibility to how this earth works. And we have a responsibility to them. If they're going to feed us and take care of us and nourish us, then we have a responsibility to them, and we have to speak up for them, and we have to protect them. So we don't consider that it our right to salmon. It's our relationship to salmon. And to teach them about that relationship, I think you can see how they're sort of going into the world with a lot bigger idea of how they fit into it than if they hadn't have come across some of these issues, not having been sort of in this area and learning about it firsthand. I think it's really important that we understand our relationship to this place. We all live here, and we have a very long history here in Humboldt County of people coming in and just using resources until they go away. And we are still recovering from that to this day. And it is Native people that carry that memory with them of what it was like to be able to go to the river and watch thousands of salmon swim upstream, and to hear stories from our elders about being able to walk on the backs of salmon and the way that the river turned silver, and to know that that's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for the fact that we will be able to restore this. A lot of Native communities, when they talk about restoration, it is that we have been told from the very beginning of our cultural ceremonies and practices, we've been told that it is our cultural ceremonies and practices that will restore this earth. So every couple of years, we do these things called world renewal ceremonies. It is there that we are rebalancing the earth for everyone. And that's why we do them. So I know that it's possible because we've been doing it for a really long time.
Well, I started off this episode by joking that, you know, a professor of Native American studies, a commercial fisherman, an environmentalist all came into the studio. You know, that it was like the setup to a punchline for a joke. But really, I think that this is what gives me hope, is that we have diverse voices kind of joined together to fight for our shared interests. So, Regina, can you tell me a little bit more about this event that is coming up, and how can people find out more information?
So we're planning an event that's called Recalling Save Our Salmon Benefit Dinner. It's a fundraiser, but also it's going to be a very fun event. Irie Rockers and Digging Dirt will be playing. There'll be a big seafood dinner, and there'll be speakers from the commercial fishing community and from the Yurok tribe and Winnemowintu tribes. Also some youth speakers, because the youth really are important to this effort. And it's at the Eagle House Inn in Eureka on May 27th at 6 o'clock. And if you want to learn more, you can go to Save the Klamath Trinity Salmon on Facebook, or you can go to the Institute for Fisheries Resources, which is ifrfish.org/Eureka. And so we hope to see everyone out at the Eagle House Inn, May 27th, 6 o'clock.
ifrfish.org. All right. Well, thank you all for being here today. This has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Kutcher Risling-Baldy, Regina Cicizola, and Dave Bitts about salmon. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this episode or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. And this is something else that I'm excited about. We are now a podcast on iTunes. So you could subscribe to the Eco News podcast. You can listen to it as you're going back and forth to the river. So go on iTunes and search for the Eco News Report. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred, as always, for engineering. Join us again next week, right here.